Hello and welcome to Deadpool It Yourself, a podcast that is in a heavy need for some tagline writing because we don't fucking have one right now. I am one of your hosts, the Senseless Apprentice, and I am still waiting on my damn Sports Illustrated football phone. When is it going to come in? And if you got that reference, you're not old yet, but you are way closer to it than some people your age. Because Wayne's World 2 is pretty obscure now that we're in the 2020s. But anyway, enough about me and my obscure shit. I'm joined by a man who, to my knowledge, has never been injected with ambiguous science to artificially grow up over the course of days. But then again, I don't actually know what he does in his off time. Seeing is believing, and I don't see him all the time. So, anyway, Mr. Verano.
What's up? What's up? As far as I know, no, I'm not artificial. I do have enough memories that, yeah, I've had crappy birthdays. I've had good birthdays. Great relationships, shitty relationships. So a lot more memories than Deadpool. I think that's a win, right?
Yeah, but that's a result of a slippery s cellular structure or something like that, the way they refer to it in the comics.
Well, regardless, I feel like I'm winning. So. No, I'm all good. My off time is work and wrestling and watching either a shitty or a good product. I hate Roman Reigns. I'll end with him.
I think he's gonna win tonight.
Screw him. I think he has. I think he has.
I totally want, you know what I really wanted? Or what I eventually really want? I want him to be involved in some big storyline, which would have been perfect with this Elimination Chamber stuff. But the way they should bring Jimmy Uso back when he's finally done healing from his leg injury, in my opinion, is that they should have this storyline where Roman Reigns has. Maybe he's got a fatal four-way coming up or something. I don't fucking know. But what happens is they make a big show of him sending Jay off to take care of the problem. And then all of the other opponents, when they're doing promos or in their matches, keep getting attacked and taken out. Really a la fucking back in the Attitude era days with a faction. And so, someone starts taking these people out, but then by the second or third person, you got a split screen camera and Jay is doing something while the one of the people is being, attacked. So everybody's like, "Oh my God, it's not Jay." And then the last two of these people are in like a match at the end of the night and someone comes down and attacks him, and then Roman Reigns and Jay come out on the ramp. And like are just looking down, and then the person takes off their mask or their hood or whatever that's obscuring their reference, and it's Jimmy. And it's just like Jimmy's taking his seat at the table and shown his worth or whatever. And that would be like a cool ass way to bring him back. But my problem with all this shit is they won't pull the trigger on building good factions anymore.
And that's a shame because AEW has, I think, done better with building factions. And as to establishing them as elite players, I think that's what they're working at. But
Yeah.
they build them to either, they still build them to where their matches are fun. And you always are intrigued to know what the crap they're going through. Like Dark Order versus Jungle Express, it's entertaining because you don't know who from Dark Order you get because there's too many. But from Jungle Express, all three of them are fun to watch because they're actually really all good wrestlers. And
Well,
you just don't kind of give that kind of credit in WWE to do that and let people kind of like, I don't know, be pitch it better. It's like, hey, look, we're pretty good. Like, let us try and make a faction. Let's bring one more person.
At the same time, like the AEW versus WWE comparison is kind of an apples to oranges comparison because AEW is working on a whole different thing. And honestly, there are places where I think AEW is making the same fucking missteps that they made, 20 years ago. Because let's not, there's a reason why WCW, when they were up against WCW, they'd often refer to Ted Turner on WWF back in the day. And now the people who are broadcasting AEW are Turner Network Television.
Yeah.
You know, and the thing that I find really bad about what they're doing is they might have some really good stuff there and they might be building something really interesting, but they're not maximizing the potential of it if they're not accessing a streaming market, which they're not, essentially, because it's through TNT, and the only way to use TNT streaming is to have a cable account. And like, so most of the people who, there are a lot of people who don't have a cable account and just, you know, access different streaming services to pastiche sort of whatever their television watching stuff is. It's a different framework than it is when we grew up, and Turner's not learning that lesson. It's what fucked him with the WWF in the late 90s, and it's what's gonna fuck him with WWE right now, because WWE, they're running a completely different system, you know? What you're talking about, they do that down in their developmental place because they let the young bucks go at it and have long matches to prove themselves. But once they get up into the non-developmental area, you know, they preserve and protect. And that's why, like, the matches are shorter, they have less daring moves, and they're more theatrical in a way. You know, it's all the few fucking setup moves that they can bilk, you know, the brogue kick and the Superman punch, and every fucking person who does a damn super kick or a spear, because I swear to God, everybody's got fucking one.
I mean, they do. I mean, those companies, well, I really don't see the spear as much in AEW. I know there's like three people that do it.
Yeah, but isn't regular? Again, and AEW's got to deal with Impact. Shit.
Oh, and with NJPW. So it's, to me, it's fun because I actually appreciate at least NJPW and AEW more. Impact to a degree. I mean, they're entertaining. They're a little off when they do some of their segments. I'm like, you know, this is super terrible. Not in the good way. It just sucks.
Yeah, WWE does that in their developmental. I was telling, we were talking about this the other day where I was watching Vengeance, and there's all these good matches between, you know, great developmental characters, but some of them you can tell, you can see why they're still in developmental, because they're hitting they're hitting the spots just a little bit off, and it's like, oh, that's why you're still down here. That's why they called Finn Balor down to you know, show you guys and be the leadership guy, because they needed somebody who's going to help you tighten up your shit. You know, when there's a in the opening match, when there's a fucking hold that looks like you're just holding onto a person's foot, why the fuck do I care? You know, especially when the person you're holding can kick you in the head, Ember Moon.
You're still salty about that match.
I'm salty about that match. I'm salty about that fucking spot. That was a shit spot, and they did it for like 2 minutes, like a full minute. It was just like, look, I get that Dakota Kai isn't selling this fucking hold real well, but it's a stupid looking hold. Like, do some. The figure four looked bad, even if you didn't have to, you know, apply the pressure to make it bad. You know, like they have leg based moves that, you know, can look real fucked, even if you're not making it real fucked to the person that you're giving it to. And this was just, it looked like, I mean, I swear to God, it looked like she was holding her fucking leg.
Because I didn't pay too much attention to that match.
And if they fucked up and it was like not a good positioning, it's just like, then get the fuck out of it and call something on the fly, because that was stupid. And then when she finally does kick her in the head, it doesn't get her out of the fucking hold. It was so dumb.
Yeah, not the best match. Others were great though, but not to sidetrack too much ourselves.
Yeah, not to get into something that's completely off format, which is totally within our
trust us, we can probably do our own podcast on how much we either have fun watching pay per views or how much we both have different opinions about it. So,
different people.
Yes. So, recap ourselves here. Starting with you, Senseless Apprentice.
But you know. I guess part of the reason that we let ourselves get so sidetracked, though, is that we find ourselves missing a co-host. So we're not sure what happened, we're gonna mention that he was an agent of Mr. Sinister this time, so maybe, you know, when we get to it, there's a lot of cornfields and there's a lot of real ambiguous shit that gets together on Mr. Sinister's wacky farm. So you know, we hope that he's all right and that Sinister didn't actually get him, figure out that he was a double agent. But Minnie's not with us today, our agent of wherever we need him to be.
Yes, our best mole in any organization. Because no one looks too low to find him because he just slips right by.
I mean, we figured he was safe this time because he was going and hiding amongst the mad scientists from the House of M's equivalent of Pa Kent, which in an odd twist was Mr. Sinister, but you know, he disappeared. We haven't seen him. So, you know, we hope he's fine. We hope Sinister didn't do anything wrong. And, well, I mean, we hope to hear about him soon.
Yes. He does have that one, hidden walkie talkie on him. I hope he remembers how to turn it on. It's as simple as shit. But I'm sure he's trying to hide and not get, not get found out, which, you know, would happen to him. He has the worst kind of luck.
So, oh man, you know, it's a real fun pastime, to segue into something completely unrelated and still not on topic is, speculating wildly about shit that people care way too much about because they get pissed and I just like to see what sticks. I remember when, you remember when everybody wanted to know who Snoke was when the Star Wars stuff was going on and nobody knew what was going on with Snoke or why he looked so ugly but was so fucking powerful anyway? And then, you know, eventually the whole reveal happened. I was pissing people off because I wanted Jar Jar to be the ultimate Sith. And for Snoke to be a puppet of Jar Jar Binks. And, it didn't happen, but then when everybody else was pissed off about the Palpatine reveal, I was sitting there going, hey, remember all that shit you were getting mad about when I was saying it was Jar Jar Binks? Cut, paste, Emperor Palpatine, same fucking theory.
Yeah.
I picked the wrong character to focus on. And they were just like, I've been doing that with WandaVision now. So, I'm going to inferentially spoil things for people. So if you don't want to not know what the fuck I'm talking about because you haven't seen it yet, I'm going to mention things. You won't fucking get it, but, you know, it's not really a spoiler, but it will be about stuff that you'll watch and go, oh, that's what he meant when he said that. But then again, I figure it's just my mom listening anyway. So who the fuck cares? So, I still think Doctor Strange is going to show up. Have you been watching?
No, I only watched the first two episodes, and I told myself I'll wait till it's over, and then I'll watch the whole season.
Well, I'm not going to reveal. All I'm going to say about the most recent episode is they had a Nexus of All Realities commercial, which was fucking awesome.
Ooh.
And the thing about it is the Nexus of All Realities hints towards something. First off, they revealed something about who is Agatha Harkness because they've been fucking guessing for a while now, but they revealed who is Agatha Harkness. She is there. Not going to tell you who. But people by now know that Quicksilver showed up. But what they showed seems to imply that this Quicksilver is the Fox Quicksilver, just being, but not summoned by Wanda.
Okay.
Which is kind of, so what that means is still can bring in those Marvel those non-MCU Marvel characters that just got acquired in the Fox buyout, but it's just interesting, and the fact that they reference the Nexus and stuff like that really hints towards you know, this Pietro sticking around and still being Pietro later on, which is cool because they had some really comics accurate shit in the last few episodes for him. But yeah, I love speculating wildly. I still think Doctor Strange is going to show up. I still think Nightmare's the one fucking around. Everybody else, everybody I see online is still guessing fucking Mephisto. And I'm sure some people are on the train of, because of the theme song they played when they revealed stuff about Agatha Harkness. You know, I'm sure some people are going to be like, no, there's not an extra one. So we got a new competing theory. But my theory is that, you know, Nightmare's still fucking things around. And Doctor Strange is going to show up before the end.
Well, I guess we'll have to just wait and see.
I know. And nobody, I tried to, you don't know anything of what I was talking about.
No.
I figured. Yeah, but that's the kind of stuff we do on this podcast, because who the fuck needs listeners?
By the way, yes, we do need listeners. Please spread the word. This has been a commercial by Verano. Thank you very much.
So anyway, let's I guess, you know, now that I've spent the last 10 minutes spoiling WandaVision and ranting about a 2 week old developmental territory wrestling pay-per-view, great writing, great planning here.
Hell yeah.
Let's get into our recap. This week, what we're recapping is Cable and Deadpool issue 17, which is still part of the Enema of the State storyline. It's part three, House of which coincidentally, this storyline itself, the book that we're on in the trades, ends after the next issue, I think. So we're actually planning on a sort of interesting little break coming up for any listeners that are out there. Hi, Mom. Hi, Aunt Phyllis.
Not anybody else that I might have mentioned. I don't remember your names. Thanks.
But we're gonna jump into sort of, because we last time we didn't fucking do it, and the tie-in that I thought was just gonna be like, ah, who gives a shit, reverberated throughout every single storyline going on. And it was like, well, this time the tie-in is, I don't know if it's going to reverberate. I don't remember, but fuck it. Let's go and do the actual thing. So we actually have something coming up that we're going to call Deadpool Itself Presents House of M, as we go through the House of M. And the interesting thing that I find about the House of M is right now it's being used, or it's being mentioned a lot as the source material for what is going on with Wanda and WandaVision. And yeah, there is that. The real reason it was written was because Fox was on the cusp of, they just greenlit X-Men Origins Wolverine. And that meant that either Marvel and Marvel Studios was going to get to decide what Wolverine's backstory was, or Fox was going to do it for him. So they wrote this storyline where the biggest thing that happens is that Scarlet Witch uses her reality altering powers to give everyone that's coming to confront her exactly what they want. But she didn't count on one of the people being Wolverine, because exactly what he wants is the memories that he never had. So he wakes up with his memories and they stick around afterward, because that way Marvel could be like, yeah, here's the, in the stories that came after House of M, they could be like, yeah, here's Wolverine's actual canon backstory. Fuck you, Fox.
I'm intrigued for that. I really am.
Oh, it's a great story. It's really well written. So that was just a side note based on the title, but we're going to, in the next few weeks, we're going to jump out and we're going to do House of M, where we discuss House of M in our recap, and our DIY segment is going to turn into more of a cooking based thing. And we'll try to get some good recipes to help you guys learn new stuff about.
Yes.
Or, and you know, we'll probably
a few recipes will be up from Wolverine himself. Which, yes, you will need a adamantium knife. You try and grab that.
So, yep, that was another side note that we had to jump into, but what we, so we're looking at Enema of the State Part 3, House of and it's written by Fabian Nicieza. The pencils are by Patrick Zercher. The inks are by Udon's Meth. The colors are by Gotham. The letters are Visual Calligraphy's Corey Pettit. And the cover art, which is Deadpool from the neck down holding a baby
Who
Cable.
is adorable, by the way. Adorable.
And that is drawn by Patrick Zurcher, Udonis Meth, and Paul Mounce. And this is Cable and Deadpool issue 17. So, for new listeners, because I know my mom told my aunts and uncles about this show, so I'm hoping, like I said, Aunt Phyllis or Uncle Greg might be listening in. Hi. Sorry about all the swearing. Please don't bring it up at the next family dinner.
Me too. And then can I please get any video evidence of how that conversation went? I'd love to watch it.
Fuck
And
no.
the prince's mom's is listening. Hi. You're awesome.
So a comprehensive recap up to Enema of the State happened back in episode 11, which if you're looking for it is called Back to the Character Development. But for the first time in a while, the already written exposition page is pretty damn good once we get to the part where it's the characters that don't have anything to do with the story talking, because it's a really fun jump back to that not the how Age of Apocalypse, but that Age of Apocalypse where Cable was war. The three other horsemen show up and give a pretty good recap. So the two of us are going to bumble around giving their recap, but that's after I explain what's going on around this issue, because this is barely tied to House of M in the sense that House of M is happening, and the writers and artists for this issue are probably told this is what's happening throughout the worldwide in this story. So to connect it to everything, you better make up a story where fucked up shit happens because Scarlet Witch did shit. So that it's it kind of helps to know what's going on. So this start until we get to our full looking at the House of Them, this is just a brief explanation of what's going on. It's mainly important to know that the Scarlet Witch suffered a mental break in a way where her teammates, the Avengers, were gut punched. Like I didn't read Avengers Dis or I haven't read Avengers Disassembled in a long time, and so I don't remember exactly what it was. It does have to do with her kids and the fact that they're not real kids because her husband's not a real person, and so they were like imbued with parts of her soul. And when she wasn't around, they kind of would revert to drooling states, and other Avengers started to notice and kind of be like, "What's going on with Wanda?" And then, her powers just go fucking crazy, and the Avengers got gut punched. Hawkeye died in a way that, if you remember, way, way, way back when we were covering the 30 Pieces storyline, Deadpool and Agent X make a bunch of jokes about the security latches on their fail-safe harnesses, because everyone knows you should have a fail-safe so you can just pop it off and not get sent into a Kree ship to explode, because that's kind of what happens to Hawkeye is he his incendiary whatever's get blowed up and he's still in them.
Thanks.
That happened in Avengers Disassembled, so that's weighing on all the Avengers' minds, that and a few other characters that died. Spoiler alert for a 15-year-old story, when we discuss House of M, we're going to be talking about Hawkeye's resurrection, because they didn't keep him dead for long. They kept him dead for half a year, if that. Anyway, the new Avengers, a team which includes some notable X-Men like Wolverine, met with the Astonishing X-Men, which was written by a guy who's really not getting a lot of good press these days. So we'll just say his name rhymes with Hoss Bleedin', and that's kind of what he's doing right now because of how he liked to direct movies and shows. But his Astonishing X-Men and Professor X meet with these new Avengers to discuss what to do about Wanda. At the end of Disassembled, Magneto comes and collects his daughter and takes her to Genosha, and Professor X kind of goes to try to help be her therapist or psychologist or whatever. and he's coming back to tell everyone, it's not going great. She's definitely way stronger than I can handle. And so, you know, the X-Men feel that she is a mutant problem that hurt the Avengers, but both teams, because, you know, while the X-Men feel she's a mutant problem that can get very dangerous for the world, the Avengers are her friends and are more reluctant to have to fight against her. Both teams felt they had jurisdiction regarding her ultimate fate. Neither team realized that Quicksilver was spying on them, and so he runs back half-cocked because he hasn't heard, you know, all he's heard is kind of what Wolverine says gruffly, and then, you know, all these people are like, you know, anyone else who's not as cynical as that guy, I want to talk. And, you know, they basically, the Avengers and the X-Men resolve to go and talk to Wanda and see what Professor X is saying for themselves. But when Quicksilver runs off, all he's heard is the suggestion from Wolverine that they should just fucking kill her. And so that's what he goes back and tells her. And so, I'm getting too in depth of something we're going to be doing anyway in a few weeks. But basically, they get to the island of Genosha. Wanda uses her powers to access Xavier's telepathy and craft a world that would distract those who meant to possibly kill her. A world that gives her friends and loved ones the life their hearts desired. And that's going to be fun to look at, because they want a lot of different things that are really interesting considering what kind of characters they are in the real world. So when we get to that, that's going to be fun to unpack. It's a world where her father uncovered Nixon's anti-mutant conspiracy and established a benevolent world monarchy known as the House of M. And this is the world that Deadpool has found himself in while he was on a completely unrelated adventure that is better explained by these characters from N, Age of Apocalypse.
So
before we get into this, you want to take Archangel, and then I'll just have two different voices, one for Blob and one for Spider-Man?
Sure, take all the fun, why not? No, it's not. Yeah, I'll play Archangel.
All
right. I am Death. I am the Horseman of the Apocalypse. Once I was Warren Worthington, the winged mutant called Archangel.
No one cares, you pansy. You don't even appear in this issue anyways. This is just a recap page. A venomous pox on this page! I regurgitate botulism and bile on this page!
Any and all will be forewarned. This is the Age of Apocalypse.
Jeez! Will you let me, okay? We're from an alternate Earth. Different version of characters most of you know. He's Archangel, and he's Spider-Man. And I'm Hercules.
You are not.
You are the Blob. Okay, whatever. Anyways, on our world, the mutant monster called Apocalypse had basically fricasseed the entire planet. Where is Muscle?
This guy named Deadpool. He's a merc with a mouth. Came from his Earth to ours looking for his buddy, Cable. Big guy, white hair, glowing eyes, techno-organic arm and stuff.
Who was revealed on our world to be the Horseman War. Glory to Apocalypse.
You're almost getting the hang of it, Wings. Anyways, since our world's Cable wasn't his Cable, Deadpool used his teleporting ability combined with some funky intergalactic harness thingy to leave our world and escape to another alternate Earth. He bounced to several alternate Earths in his search, finding different versions of Cable on each one.
Don't forget about Siren and Cannonballs.
No S, I don't think.
Pretty sure Siren has an S.
Never mind. Anyways, Deadpool's got two handlers keeping an eye on him, Siren and Cannonball, mutants who were part of the X-Force team Cable used to lead. They lag about 3 minutes behind each of his jumps. So after Deadpool left the last world, he ended up on what he thinks is another alternate world. Now, he's on a nice Nebraska farm. And inside the farm, he found a baby. with white hair, a glowing eye, and a techno-organic arm. Cable is a baby, and his nanny is...
Sinister!
All right, so in the opening splash page, Deadpool has instinctively stabbed Mr. Sinister in the upper arm as he provides a wholly necessary expository introduction of the villain, who's holding baby Cable in his left arm as his right arm is currently being stabbed.
Oh. Sinister, however, objects to most of the things that Deadpool says about him, except for the part about his powers involving complete control of his genetic structure. As Sinister holds Deadpool in upper body in one enlarged claw hand, Deadpool notices Dazzler, the X-Men, on the TV. Sinister enthusiastically corrects him.
That is Allison. Everyone knows who Allison Blair is. Talk show, magazines, books, movies. To not know her, you would have to be a hermit or an idiot.
Well, I am an idiot. This is apparently enough for all to be forgiven, and Deadpool asks Sinister if he can use the restroom. They run the gag where Sinister tries to get the information out of Deadpool, but finds that it's awkward to talk to him while he's actively pissing, covering two pages with a supplemental recap of what was been going on in case people didn't read the recap page. This is literally two pages ago.
And he's not over-exaggerating that. We just acted out the recap page that was two pages before this entire recap that they do of the same fucking story all over again. It was really bad. For such... So, Sinister asked the most important question of the moment.
And why is this important for you to find Cable? Don't ask the question if you don't want to know the answer.
He's important to me. To a lot of people.
A leader? A powerful man? A warrior? A savior?
Yes, 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 and wannabe.
Deadpool starts to talk about the people who will be along helping him out on his mission as the perspective changes to outside amongst the cows. Cannibal and Siren are hiding, but not well, since they're both wearing bright superhero costumes in the midst of a herd of black, brown, and white cattle. You know, wearing colors that don't match them, you stand out.
No, they totally blend in. You just have to not see the blue in the cows, you know, because there's so many fucking blue cows. Yes,
and, you know, and Doctor, and, damn it, what's that one character, what's that one guy who did, Who and Here's the Who? Ah, Dr. Seuss. Yeah, there'd be blue cats in that.
That guy. So this is where we get to eat our words with regard to Teresa Cassidy's powers, because I'm pretty sure we had a conversation where we talked about how, like, oh, she screams loud and can use her screams to, like, fly. It was because we were comparing her to, like, Black Bolt versus Black Canary from DC. Yeah. Thing is, I don't know of either of them that can do some of the things that they show Teresa Cassidy doing in this issue. So one of the things, she doesn't just have these sonic screams that allow her to fly. She and Cannonball have heard, like, they basically reveal in these panels that she and Cannonball have heard the entire conversation between Deadpool and Sinister, because her power over sonics, like all sound, allowed her to bend the sound waves to them and basically make it so that, like, She basically can sort of be her own fucking bug. she essentially has the farm bugged, because she can just be like, oh, they're talking in there and I can sense it. And she can move, like, arrange the sound wave so that they can hear it without anyone knowing that they can hear it, which is actually pretty fucking cool.
Now, they're beginning to formulate a plan where they turn around to a giant holographic image of Sinister's head, inviting them for a barbecue. Retreated to another exposition scene as Sinister explains where this version of Cable comes from as the six of them sit around the dinner table. But Deadpool is the only one enthusiastically eating any food.
Yeah, I mean, Siren and Cannonball are literally both sitting with their arms crossed, like, you know, Karens who really just don't approve. they really are visually showing the reader that they are definitely not eating that fucking food. Sinister is too busy telling the Nate Gray variant of the Cable backstory to eat.
Who the hell is this Nate Gray variant?
So, okay, Cable in the 616, which is the main Marvel storyline continuity, is Cyclops' biological son that he had with a clone of Jean Grey named Madeline Pryor. Madeline was engineered by Sinister and released when he heard about Jean's supposed death during the Dark Phoenix saga. Sinister made sure to position her close to Scott while he was grieving, because he left the team and he went back to Alaska. And his Sinister's time as a Yenta paid off when Scott and Madeline were married on the X-Mansion grounds. Scott finds it odd that she looks very, very similar to his ex-girlfriend, but whatever, marries her anyway. Cable, Nathan Christopher Summers, is the son that was born out of that specific union. Nate Gray, on the other hand, is the combination of the samples of the genetic material of the Scott Summers and Jean Grey of the Age of Apocalypse grown in a test tube in one of that version of Sinister's labs. So, like, basically Nate Gray, and you know my beef with this, because, you know, you have Jean Grey being the sum of all telepathic and force and telekinetic power, and then Cyclops being the guy who shoots concussive beams out of his eyes, obviously a fucking pinnacle of mutant achievement, being the ones who are supposed to make the mutant of greatest potential. But the thing is, in this farm, the story that Sinister tells, this version of Sinister tells, is much more similar to the Nate Gray story, where it's just, you know, samples test tube, as opposed to the biological son of a clone and Cyclops, you know, story that is the actual Cable's backstory.
Yeah. Anyways, Sinister also explains the current events of House of M, where the Overlord Magnus, who we know as Magneto, defeated the human threat and ruling from his kingdom of Genosha, established a golden age, in quotations I would say, where those with superpowers were at the top of the socioeconomic and political structures, and baseline humans lived in the lives of second-class citizens worldwide. Ooh, sounds like our world.
It was basically a reversal of the way they kind of present the 616, where, you know, mutants are the ones who are an allegory for minorities and undertrodden people, and in this case they got the upper hand and the humans were the ones who kind of were on the bottom.
An offhand comment about how Deadpool is not a mutant leads Sinister to interject that Deadpool must be, due to the amount of barbiturates that have been laced into the food. Deadpool explains his healing powers and Sinister's having revealed himself to be every bit the mad scientist he was made out to be, so he is super honest. Ask if he can dissect Deadpool later. As he continues to eat the drug food, Deadpool says, okay. Siren and Cannonball are ready to leave.
So, Sinister wants to take everyone on a tour of his laboratory that in this context, because of the goofiness of the storyline, I so want to call it his laboratory. Oh, yeah. You know, like, yeah. Dexter. Sinister wants to take his laboratory, and Siren puts up her sonic shield in time for Deadpool to explain that the reason he hasn't tried to teleport yet is because he doesn't want to leave baby Cable with the mutant Mengele that is Mr. Sinister. If you don't know who Mengele is, he's a son of a bitch from Nazi Germany who ran twin studies that were just horrifically inhumane studies of the extremes that the human body could withstand. And then after World War II, he escaped to South America, and it is believed that he, you know, lived a relatively comfortable life until he died. So, you know, he's got a bad reputation. He's the subject of the Slayer song Angel of Death is about him. And I always remember, or like to, that little factoid where people gave Slayer a bunch of shit and said they were honoring Nazis. And the guy who wrote the song said, if you looked at the lyrics, we didn't think we had to say, this shit's bad. And that's the kind of person Mengele was. That song's about him and his action. So if you want some brief artistic explanation, that's where you can go. If you want to actually do research, his name's Joseph Mengele, and he's a huge son of a bitch. And it's not, based on how they characterize Mr. Sinister, it's not an exaggeration. It does fit to call him the Mengele of mutants.
As they enter the lab, we're treated to a splash page of a giant red cybernetic room with circuitous, thank you, white panel floors. Around the room are holoprojectors showing scenes from the main House of M story, with Cable in a little crib in the middle.
So, actually, I fucked that up. It should have been circuitous. It's a weird word because it's spelled the same way, almost the same way as circuitous, but what I was trying to get across was this entire room looks like it's just made up of circuitry, you know, and so it's just hard to, there's not really, I don't know of a good way to say that, but it's very circuit. It almost looks like the opposite of Cable's techno-organics, where it's definitely techno but not organic, and it's supposed to kind of contrast that and look not organic but also be very, very similar to his techno parts. And, you know, it's supposed to show, even as warm as the Sinister has tried to make himself look, it's supposed to show how cold he still is as a caregiver emotionally and all that. It's interesting. There's also a mention of Tesseract technology from Sinister. I don't know. I don't remember hearing it a lot before, sort of the Avengers movies and stuff like that. So I find it interesting that it was here way before the Avengers movies. As he explains how he can use the features of his lab to send Siren and Cannonball to Westchester, which is the location of the X-Mansion, for those of you out there who don't read as many comics as Verano and I.
After the backup leaves, Sinister turns his attention to Deadpool and says, "So, you mean to take the child from me?"
As they square off, Sinister begins to exclaim his hopes for baby Cable. And he really lives up to the mutant Mengele nickname. He explains that the only reason the world is currently stable is because of Magneto's strength. Sorry, I should have brought some water out here. Jeez. In 30 years, when his children have taken over the world, when he's gone and his children are the ones to inherit it, he says someone will seek to overthrow them. And he adds that if baseline humans are still around, and the heavy implication there is, if they haven't been exterminated, wink, wink, you know, he adds that if baseline humans are still around at that time, they will make things worse with desperate acts of terrorism, you know. So in Sinister's mind, might want to get rid of them now. Wink, wink, Magnus, you know, and that's kind of where he believes his little boy or his little test tube boy is going to come into play.
As Sinister talks, his lab grabs Deadpool and pulls ambiguous samples out of Deadpool's shoulder with three rather menacing needles attached to a metallic arm. Sinister explains to Deadpool DNA can accelerate his plans with baby Cable, as it can help him quicken the growing process, but his back is turned when the first thing that grows back is Cable's powers.
In the ensuing telekinetic maelstrom, Deadpool manages to catch the kid and get impaled on a Sinister arm. He attempts to body slide when he hits the ground, only to, oddly, be stuck in place. When it finally works, the fade to white is similar to the fade to white that is familiar to fans of the House of M event washes over everything, as Deadpool notes that this time the teleportation is different. Wow, I fucked up that
one. Our issue closes to that effects of the Scarlet Witch's "No More Mutants" genocide washes the world in white, as Deadpool barely escapes Mrs. Sinister with the baby Cable beforehand.
Yeah, so basically what I was trying to say in my line was that this last part of that issue coincides with when we do go over House of M. There's a part where I won't say what precedes it because it's a fucking amazing scene.
Yeah, don't ruin it right now.
But
yeah, don't ruin that right now.
Oh, I'm not going to. I'm just going to say that Scarlet Witch addresses her father and basically tells him, you know, fuck you for ruining my brother and I. And then she's like, I tried to give you everything you wanted. And this is this battle, this climactic battle is what becomes of it. So fuck you. No more mutants. And because that was your entire focus for through our childhood and through our adulthood. So you know what? Fuck it. You don't get anything you want. No mutants. And in the subsequent story arcs, it's essentially, you know, to people like Cyclops and the X-Men, it's basically the genocide of their people. So Scarlet Witch becomes kind of the mutant Hitler in a weird way. So that's what we were trying to connect to, and I fucked up my line.
Yeah, it's okay. We all have one of those days.
Well, one of those 14 episodes of a podcast.
Yeah. We'll have another one in another 14 episodes.
Oh, no, I just meant it happens every episode, and so one of those 14 episodes of a podcast. One of those days, or, you know, every single time we record.
slight. So we did have a slight favorite art. For me, honestly, it's the cover. I think it's just kind of cute how they really focus on the baby. Just drawn so well. I was like, you wouldn't think you'd actually be, you know, kind of like, oh, it's a cute baby that's half metal. And yeah, strong as shit, even though you wouldn't think it.
I honestly like the fight between Sinister and Deadpool. I did like the contrast of the whole environment and how impersonal the whole environment was, and how personal Sinister was trying to make himself seem, and how Deadpool, with little effort, was really more connected to the baby than Sinister ever would be. And it's a really well drawn and well written fight scene, I think. And I think that comes in contrast with a lot of what was in the comic, because they had a lot of cool gags that were just like not as good because they used them for weird things, like a recap of the story 2 pages after we just read a recap page made no sense to me, even if there was that comedy bit involved with it, you know. So the fight at the end was really good. It was really well timed, and I liked how the fade out, the white fade out, was meant to be notably different and sort of indicate to the reader, hey, this is not our normal teleport. You know, something else is going on. I thought that I might have issue with some of the parts of the rest of this comic, but the ending I thought was pitch perfect, and so a lot of the art that went with it was really good too.
To me, that's actually my favorite part of the story is the fade and the fight there. I think it just leads well into what we're getting to next time.
Yeah. So, yeah. And I mean, yeah, I guess you could tell it wasn't just my favorite art, but also my favorite part of the story. I don't know. The other part of the story that I thought was really cool, but I guess I wouldn't call it my favorite, but I thought it was really cool when you saw that, you know, Siren wasn't just your run of the, she's not just a copy of her father, you know, she's not just Sonic Scream and that's it. Like, she has this much more nuanced manipulation of sound waves and sonics that I think is drawn really cool and done in a really good way here.
Yeah, I think, yeah. Sorry, I was like trying out a yard, but I agree. I was gonna say story MVP.
In a weird way, Sinister.
I was gonna have to agree with that. I think he just ever the classy, terrible, not terrible, but like classic good bad guy that you just really want to hate. was really trying to pull heartstrings to a degree, but you're like, I ain't buying shit. You're terrible. You got really pale, ashy skin, you creepy bastard.
Well, that's the thing with this issue and the way they do him, they show him in this issue is you almost want to trust him in the beginning because you know something off is going on. You know they've already explained that it's connected to the House of M. You know it's an alternate reality, and he seems so good for the first half of the issue where it's just like he really is like Deadpool stabs him and he's really confused, like, why did you do that? I'm just holding my kid. You know, and he seems really good. And then with that subtle turn right in the middle of the issue where it's just like, oh, no, this guy's got to be a mutant. Well, why do you say that? Because I tried to drug you. And he's the only one who took the bait and he's still awake. You know, and the turns and the cues for Sinister to just really show that even in this alternate reality, he's still just that twisted guy that he always was.
From the early 1900s. Or late 1800s? One of the two.
Victorian era. So late 1800s.
Yeah, so it's really cool. I think his backstory is interesting, how he really is so driven that as to where he is now, like, yeah, he's mad.
Yeah. He's still a mad scientist, but you almost don't see it. Shittiest character. And I don't want to do it because I actually like the guy. Normally, but fucking Cannonball was just nothing.
No, issue. Like he was mentioned, but he literally doesn't get nothing out of it. And I have to agree. He ends up being the shitty one for once. I mean, I would normally, if you've been hearing this, I would normally always say Cyclops, but he's not really thrown in here. Cannonball kind of is for 2 seconds. And yeah, he sucks shit tonight.
Well, and the thing is, even when he's right about Sinister, even when you find out that Sinister is as big a shithead as Cannonball's sort of been acting like, you're still kind of like, well, but he was being nice to you, so you could have at least, you know, been cautious but cordial. You know, Cannonball was just kind of petulant and angry the entire time.
Yeah, get laid. So. I think that's his problem.
Well. You know, who was it? That's valid. You know, it's Cannonball and Siren, and there's always, because, you know, you can't have comics and you can't have all opposite genders in comics without some kind of sexual tension.
It is a segue from sexual tension. Our skit. Huh? And this is delayed. We meant to do this last week, but unfortunately, we got sidetracked and it slipped us. Our skit does have to do with Valentine's. So that's kind of why I segue for a second about it.
Wait. Before we get to that, I was just making the point that, you know, there is a little bit of a jealous ex-boyfriend possibility there because Deadpool had a lot of classic storylines.
Does he remember this, though?
Deadpool probably doesn't, but they indicate that he kind of does, like when he's teleporting and she's the only one he cares about. There's a reason they're using her in this comic, and it's not just Cable. It's also the connection she has to Deadpool as well. You know, so there's a reason why it's her and not Domino showing up with this X-Force.
Domino's just nuts anyway.
And she's already in other stuff with the offering. But we can now segue back into, yeah, we're referring back to Valentine's Day because, you know, that was, we wrote this before Valentine's Day, and it was good, or at least we thought it was. Yeah,
we just got sidetracked, so regardless, we're going to go through with this.
and if you don't like it, why did you listen this far to begin with?
But if you have, it's because you know we come up with something hilarious and stupid. And you're still down for it.
Main part, yes. Being stupid.
So happy Valentine's Day, man. What the hell's that?
What do you mean? It's our annual Valentine's roulette wheel. You're not chicken out on our annual tradition, are you? Are you afraid you'll be the one stuck with the empty gift card that has to actually pay for his whole date 2 years in a row? Come on, man. Don't be a sore loser.
Okay, look. I'll admit the gift that having a gift card returned empty with a full check to pay at the end of a date is losing its humor the longer we do this? But that's not my point.
I still find it fucking funny when the loser sends a contractually obligated video.
All right, you suck. It's just we usually just place two gift cards, one with 50 and one empty, in the envelopes that's picked at random. This seems a little extra.
But I made a wheel to put a little more production into it and make it more fun. All it took was an old broomstick, two screws, a drill, and a piece of plywood that I cut into a circle. Plus, don't forget, I used the scrap pieces of the plywood to make a base at the bottom. We don't want a less painful version of last time to happen again.
Yeah, I remember. Kind of, somewhat. All right, I'm still recovering from that head wound. Anyways, all I see is a piece of circular plywood attached to an old stick on a stand. How does this have anything to do with our little game?
Well, you're the one with the artistic talent, and I made sure to have some paint here.
So I'm supposed to drop everything and decorate this wannabe Wheel of Fortune contraption that we might use once for Valentine's Day, once a year for Valentine's Day.
Oh, I was just fucking with you. I already picked our cards. Here's yours. Gotta go.
What the fuck? You fucked me over again, didn't you? Didn't you? Hey, come back here. This is an empty card. I'm not fucking doing this shit next year. You hear me?